Let's look at the need for local Christian churches to be able to operate properly in their ministry. Tell me about the fundamental agreement. What exactly is it?
This is a bit of a legalistic question. All I would say is that you have a Christian community in the Holy Land. I worked very closely with each and every single one of those communities, be they Greek Orthodox, Syrian Orthodox, Copts, Armenians, Catholics, Greek Catholics, Anglicans, Lutherans, you name them, they're there. And this is why the Holy Land is sometimes called a mosaic of faiths. Incidentally, James, it's also sometimes called the land of the forgotten faithful, because although we tend to remember St. Peter's first epistle talking about the living stones, and we write books about the living stones of the Holy Land, we forget sometimes that those living stones are easily forgotten and therefore become the forgotten faithful. So I'm digressing a little bit, but doesn't matter, because this is for me a fundamental point of the Holy Father's visit, to lift up the reality of the Christian presence in that part of the world, and to remind people that there are Christian men, women, children living there every day, going to their works, and therefore it is important to include them in our prayers, to include them in our thoughts, to include them in our endeavors as we try to move forward and better this world. I'll stop the sermon there before you smile even more broadly. And I'll go back to the fundamental agreement. The fundamental agreement is basically very simple. It's a legal agreement that regulates the relationship between the State of Israel or the Palestinian Authority, depending on where the particular church of whichever affiliation or denomination it is exists. For instance, in Bethlehem, you would turn to the Palestinian Authority because Bethlehem is run by the Palestinian Authority. If you go to Jerusalem or other parts of the Holy Land where it is within Israel or Israeli-controlled territory, then you have to turn to Israel. Now, what does the fundamental agreement mean to do? It means to regulate the relationship between the churches and the state or the authority governing that parcel of land. So, for instance, you might tell me, okay, on what? I'll tell you on what. For instance, lots and lots of missionaries, foreign priests come and serve, live in the Holy Land in different churches, in the Latin Patriarchate, in other Catholic institutions, as well as non-Catholic ones. There has to be some sort of an agreement as to how their residency permits are granted. What are their rights and responsibilities when they come? Can the local church invite them? Can the local church sponsor them to come and live or work in the Holy Land? I'll give you another example. Who and on what basis, for instance, are these people given visas? What are the financial arrangements, the practical arrangements? What needs to be done is to have more clarity. What is the relationship between the church as a living body and the church as a building? Any of your listeners who's gone to the Holy Land knows if you go only to that tiny, tiny little pocket called the Old City, you will see it's one of the biggest real estate property lands that the Christians have, because it's got convents, monasteries, schools, churches, patriarchates, everything from the Holy Sepulchre to the smallest convent is in that little part of Jerusalem. Now, how do you regulate? Do you pay taxes on it, or are you tax exempt because you're a charitable religious organization? What authority have you got to decide what to do with those buildings? These are some of the fundamental issues that need to be clarified in order for the churches to be able to manage what basically or inherently is their property. I mean, a church is not my property. So this is what the fundamental agreement is all about. And my concern is that since the days I was working in Jerusalem, and even since then, that it hasn't yet been concluded. So there is some sort of a legal black hole which needs to be eventually sorted out. And the sooner it is sorted out, the sooner the churches of Jerusalem have the legal personality to move on with their business without actually having to second guess everybody as to what rights they have and what responsibilities they have. And this is one of the things I hope that not the Holy Father himself, he's not going to go into micromanagement, but that through him, the Catholic Church would be able to impress upon the government of Israel the need to speed on a bit with this agreement so that it's concluded, endorsed by the parliament, and therefore becomes law.
Well, let's go back to the Holy Father. Let's talk about his pilgrimage. You know, we often use phrases like apostolic visit and so forth. This is a true pilgrimage, isn't it? And what I want to do is just touch on the Holy Land coordination, something that the Holy See has mandated the Bishops' Conference of England and Wales to organise the bishops of Europe and North America, led by Archbishop Patrick Kelly of Liverpool, to actually visit the local church in the Holy Land every year. I know you've had some involvement mm-hmm. in the past. The Pope is going on pilgrimage. How important is pilgrimage? I mean, we've talked about fear and perception. How important is it we get ourselves out there to the Holy Land?
It is absolutely vital for people to go there and to see. It's incredible. Again, coming back to those years that I've lived in the country, and even since then, I used to get so many letters and so many people from whether the States, Australia, Europe, wherever, telling me, oh, it's so dangerous to come there, or this is a land that is far too dangerous for us to go to, or not having a clear idea either of the spiritual impact, the religious significance of that land, or even its political and socioeconomic problems. People used then to come to the land. They would visit places. They would meet the human beings, the walking, talking, living human beings. And it's incredible, James, how their perceptions, the reality, changed, because they actually came to touch the lives of those people living in this part of the world. And it's a two-way street. You see, I have this problem with people who get on one of those one-week tourist programs.
Package
tours. They go there, they're put in buses at the airport, then they're taken from one church to another, and by church I mean the building. They're shown a history of what the churches did during so many centuries. And then they're taken back, and that's the end of it. To me, that is not that's not really what I would call for. What I used to encourage at the time, and a lot of my writings then and still, focuses on the need to have a more responsible sense of tourism. And by responsible, I say, Jesus lived, walked, cried, smiled, drank wine, didn't drink wine. He did a lot of things there, if we look at the Bible. How can we go and run from one place to another and pretend that we actually understand the Holy Land? We need to go and walk, just like he walked, in order to understand better what the realities of that part of the world are. And in order to do that, we have to give ourselves the time to breathe in the realities of that part of the world, to speak with people, be they Jews, Muslims or Christians, listen to their problems, appreciate their hopes, and also welcome them into our lives as they would welcome us into their lives. And in doing so, at the most basic level, and I'm not being naive or emotional or maudlin here, I'm being very realistic. This is the way to build bridges. This is the way to lead toward reconciliation. In order to be able to reconcile myself with the other, I have to understand the other a bit better. And I can't do that through the BBC news program or through any podcast. I have to go there to see the people. So those who have the chance, and there are many people who would love to go, but they can't afford it or they don't have the time. I respect that fully. But those who can go, meet with the local people there. There are so many programs that actually welcome people to go and stay with families, talk to them, get to know what the Holy Land is, even if it's only for a week. It's better than nothing at all. And that, in a sense, is a pilgrimage that we all can take to Jerusalem, as it were, in preparation for our other pilgrimage to heavenly Jerusalem. So in that sense, I think it's essential. And in that sense also, I think it's brilliant that the Holy Father is going on a pilgrimage of prayer, because more than anything else, he will remind us that this is where Jesus was born in Bethlehem. This is where the Annunciation happened in Nazareth. This is where he was buried and then he rose again in Jerusalem. All this in a very small parcel of land. And you know what? This is what all our story is about. Our story is not about London, Chicago, or Melbourne. It's about Jerusalem and the whole region there where all the saints actually started their early church.
Dr. Harry Hagopian, thank you very much. It's been fascinating. Going to put you on the spot here.
Oh dear.
Knowing that you speak Arabic, if you had a message for the Holy Father, what would that be in Arabic and with a translation, of course?
I'm just going to say a very simple, I'm not going to go into any kind of sophisticated message to the Holy Father or to the Church of Jerusalem, which is the host church for this pilgrimage. I'm just going to say, Allah ikun ma'ak, which means, may God be with you, Holy Father.